health food store located inside Drug Emporium on the corner of 82nd Slide Road. They have one of the largest gluten-free selections in Lubbock. If they don't have what you're looking for, then it can be special ordered for you. They are Texas-owned and operated for over 20 years. Vitamins Plus carries many locally grown and produced products in the store. Good for you groceries at great for you prices. That's Vitamins Plus, 82nd Slide Road. Come by and see us today. Welcome into You're the Cure with Dr. Ben Edwards, MD, right here on AM 580, of course, with Veritas Medical. And, of course, Veritas Medical, you can check out the website at veritasmedical.com. Also, their number at the clinic, 771-1160, 771-1160. Of course, along the way, if you have any questions for the good doctor, feel free to give us a call at any time throughout the show, 745-5800, 745-5800. And you can also text in your question as well, 806-745-5800. That's 806-745-5800. All right, well, let me say good morning once again to Dr. Ben Edwards. How are you, sir?
Good morning, Wade. I'm fine this lovely morning. How are you?
I'm doing okay.
A little bit of a cough there.
A little bit. Like. I just started that. It just happened. I might have Hillary Clinton's pneumonia.
Or you might have that dip dripping down the back of your throat.
Oh, that could be. That's the health coach over there.
She just jabbed you out of the
This is what happens when you're married to a health coach.
Uh-oh. Wade. Here we go.
This is what happens when you're married to a Wade Wilkes.
Oh, see? Look what's up with that. I don't get
today's it. Today's topic is Marriage Counseling 101, so y'all are...
Case study.
Yeah, thank y'all for that lead-in.
So we got Dr. Edwards and the health coach on the show. All right, let's go to the phones. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Would Dr. Ben talk about the medication that they're giving for breast cancer patients, the one called tamoxifen, but there's a new one out, and I think it starts with a T. If he might address that a little bit, please.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. Tamoxifen and another one that starts with a T for breast cancer, doctor.
Okay. Well, I don't know about the new one. I'm going to have to look that up that starts with a T. Tamoxifen is a, it's been around for a good while. Basically, it's a drug that binds up the estrogen receptors because a lot of these breast cancers are estrogen dominant, meaning the estrogen hormone will hook onto that cell like a key into a keyhole. The hormones fit into the receptor, and when that connection is made, then the cancer or that cell is stimulated to proliferate or grow more. So some of these cancers are extra estrogen sensitive, and they'll proliferate a lot more aggressively in the presence of estrogen. So tamoxifen blocks that receptor site so that the estrogen can't bind that receptor and therefore can't stimulate that growth. So that's the basics with tamoxifen.
So tamoxifen, let me run this through with you. It is not chemo.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. Yeah. It doesn't actually kill. It's not cytotoxic. It's not doing something to kill the cell. It's just blocking a keyhole.
Okay. And this study that just came out, I guess just recently, did we talk about this last week on the show about how chemotherapy patients, I think you were talking about it, but also had read something about how that chemotherapy, for lack of a better word, it just 50% of people that are doing chemo, maybe even higher in some cases, that it does more harm than good.
Yeah, there was a study out of Australia just a couple years ago that showed about 2.3% of patients benefit or extend their life from chemotherapy. That's
wow.
Across the board, all the different cancers together.
Right.
And in my opinion, the primary reason for that is once the cancer cells are broken out of their original site, so that would be anything more than a stage one cancer. So you get to stage three, stage four, you've got distant metastasis, you've got cancer cells throughout the body, and that's when chemotherapy is used. The problem is the studies show that chemotherapy has an effect on killing tumor cells, but not killing the cancer stem cells. So those are two different cell lines. There's the tumor cell and there's the cancer stem cell. And the chemotherapy has no effect on the stem cell. And in fact, let me correct myself, it doesn't kill the stem cell. It actually makes it hardier, more resistant to future treatment, makes it harder to kill. So the chemotherapy is only reducing tumor size, or maybe even the number of tumors in the body, and that's why you'll see your CAT scan, you know, 3 or 6 months down the road look better. The tumor's smaller, or the number of spots in your lung are less. But long term, the benefits aren't really there. Mm-hmm. And most, well, I don't know about most, but some oncologists will just come right out and tell their patients. I had a patient with stage 4 colon cancer. The day he was diagnosed, it was already stage 4, and his oncologist told him, there's no way we can save your life. This chemotherapy is not going to save your life. It may extend your life some. It may give you more days, more months, maybe another year, but we can't cure this. And that's really pretty much the case across the board when you're a stage 3, stage 4, which is when you use chemo. So that's why those big long-term studies show the overall benefit's really not there when you're dealing with chemo. Now, tamoxifen's a different story. It's not chemo. It's just blocking that receptor. So there can be some benefit from that. However, there was a study that came out and showed when you're on the tamoxifen for breast cancer, it increases your risk of uterine cancer. So there's always a plus and a minus, a pro and a con, a benefit and a risk, and you've got to weigh all those out. And with cancer, it's very difficult. But I like Oasis of Hope down in Tijuana. You can go on their website, look at their cancer rates. 5-year survival rates pretty much across the board, whether it's stage 4 breast, colon, lung, melanoma, whatever. They compare their 5-year survivals to the American, the U.S. statistics on 5-year survival. And across the board, they do better. And it's because they don't just rely on chemo, surgery, and radiation, which is what we are limited to here in America. They're able to use a wide variety of therapies. And when they need some chemo, they could use it. But since chemo doesn't work that well, it's nice that they have other things they can go to.
All right, let's do a follow-up here. Good morning.
The other medication that they were on was the first medication is letrozole, and it causes chills and sweats and anxiety and pretty rough. They are not taking any chemo.
Okay.
So but they also are going to have cataract surgery on their eyes, and they're worried about anything taken. So if you can address that, we thank you so much.
Thank you.
Well, I mean, it's hard for me to tell someone. Well, I can't really give someone any counsel on being on or off of medication when I don't know their case in particular. I'm not familiar with letrozole. I'm not a cancer expert at all, so I don't know that I can speak to that a whole lot. I'm assuming this cancer, that this breast cancer, is progressed beyond stage 1. So in that situation, I would recommend all people get educated in the other cancer treatments that are available. Most of these, again, are not FDA approved and not available here in America. But Dr. Forsyth in Reno, Nevada has a very good track record with breast cancer, even stage 4 breast cancer. I believe his 5-year survival is 65%, which is better than the national average, better than the National Institute of Health and the top cancer centers. So, I can't really say to stop letrozole or tamoxifen. I'm not going to say that. Sometimes that management is the best way to go for that particular patient. If they're not able to change their diet, not able to get to the root cause, not able to see an integrative oncologist, you do the best you can.
The Mayo Clinic, if I'm not mistaken, does have an integrative team, do they not?
Well,
a functional medicine team.
Cleveland Clinic does.
Cleveland.
Yeah, Cleveland okay. Clinic. I don't know that Mayo does. They may. I know different institutions, even Texas Tech, has an integrative medicine tract. What I've looked at, though, in many of these institutions, they're not real aggressive or real strong and not a broad base. Some of them will use just one modality like acupuncture or, you know, an herbalist, something like that. And they'll just bring these guys in to do kind of symptomatic treatment or management of a disease using these guys. And they'll call it integrative.
But not
it
full
is, but
functional.
No. Cleveland Clinic is full functional, but They're the only ones I've seen, and that's just one branch of it. It's not like the whole hospital's doing functional medicine. But it's a start, and it's going to take a long time, I think, to turn this ship around, but we'll get there.
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, Jason Fung, F-U-N-G, wrote a book called Obesity Code. Great book. Jason Fung's an MD, medical doctor. He's a nephrologist, which is a kidney specialist. And you can look him up on YouTube also. And he just explains it so beautifully in regards to diabetes, type 2 diabetes, how we're taught in medical school that it's a chronic progressive disease. It's just once you have it, you're always going to have it. It's just going to slowly get worse year by year by year, and you'll end up with all the complications. You know, you'll have small vessel disease, which is the small vessels that go to your eye, go to your kidney, go to your toes and your nerves. So you get neuropathy, you get kidney damage, you get eye damage, so more blindness, more dialysis, more amputation of the toes, more heart attack and stroke, more everything. So in school, we're just taught this is just the way it goes. You start pills, and then you take more pills and more pills. Once you get up to 3 or 4 pills and your blood sugars start to creep up again, then you go to insulin, and then you start out low, like 20 units of Lantus, and then you'll just slowly go up and up and up until you're on 100 units, and you're just always chasing this sugar. And he does a beautiful job of showing how that the treatment actually is making the disease process worse, because what we're chasing are high blood sugars, but high blood sugar isn't the problem. Insulin resistance is a problem. And what causes insulin resistance is too much insulin. So you're giving what's causing the problem. What initiated the too much insulin to begin with, though, was a diet, eating too many carbs. But the treatment, no one ever gets better. I mean, the blood sugar numbers get better, but the insulin resistance doesn't get better. And insulin resistance is the root of the disease. So it's actually getting worse year by year by year. So it's kind of like having a leg infection, as Dr. Fung talks about. If you have a leg infection, you're going to have fever. And it's kind of like treating that leg infection with Tylenol. Yeah, the fever's down, but you're not getting to the root of the problem. Mm-hmm. Same thing with blood sugar and diabetes. You're chasing blood sugars, and the blood sugar numbers are better, but your insulin resistance is worse, so year by year you get worse. And totally reversible. Totally, totally reversible. And that's what he shows in these, in his book and in his lectures. You know, long-term diabetics, 10, 20, 30 years on insulin, on 100 units of insulin. And what he does primarily is intermittent fasting, which is when you just don't eat. Pretty simple. I mean,
I do that every day.
It doesn't cost anything to not eat. It's not a special supplement. It's not a special diet. It's just don't eat. And when you do this in a particular pattern, especially, then your insulin levels drop dramatically, and therefore the insulin resistance starts to improve. So,
and that intermittent fasting, by the way, can be done just by skipping a meal. You know, traditionally we've been taught the breakfast is the most important meal of the day. Don't skip it and that kind of stuff. But the reality of it is, if you're waking up, you get ready for work, don't have anything till lunch, that you're intermittent fasting.
Yeah. If you go from supper till the next day at lunch, that's basically 16, 17, 18 hours, and that's a fast. And that qualifies as an intermittent fast. Now, when you do eat that lunch and snack and supper, it should be a good food. I mean, it shouldn't be a processed.
Can't be Taco Villa?
Preferably not. Maybe.
But I like Guadalajara's. They're made out of guacamole, right?
And corn tortillas, which
I haven't been to Taco Villa in a few years. You're going to have to educate me on what a Guadalajara is. Sounds good.
It's guacamole, I mean,
if it's guacamole, meat, and vegetables, you know, decent. But
it's on a
tortilla.
Fried corn.
Well, you got to chunk that part of it.
Scrape it off.
But even initially, if people just did intermittent fasting, even with the junk food they're eating, would be a step in the right direction. And then they can transition to eating real food, and eventually transition to more of a ketogenic / Atkins / paleo type of diet, which is primarily eating high fat, moderate protein, low carb. Call it what you want, but the majority of food that goes in your mouth should kind of fit into that ratio. More fat, moderate protein, low carb. Mm-hmm. And when you do that, especially with intermittent fasting, you'll drop your insulin big time.
I have a question. How much beef is okay to eat in a week, you think?
It depends on the patient. Everybody's individual. So
I feel like we're eating too much beef.
in general, the majority of people, I think, need to stick with, you know, around 50 to 70 grams of protein a day. Now, that's just protein. I can't say beef, chicken, egg,
well, like how
whatever.
Many times a week? Like, if I serve once or twice a week beef, is that...
It's fine. I mean, there's, in my opinion, there's nothing wrong with grass-fed beef.
Mm-hmm.
You know, commercial processed agricultural foods, the dairy and the meat, both, I'm not a fan of because there's way too much downside without enough pro side. But grass-fed beef that doesn't have growth hormone, that doesn't have antibiotic, that has the good fat, the omega-3 rich fat, you need it every day. There's okay. No problem. This whole myth of beef's bad for you and it causes heart attack, well, number one, it's the wrong kind of beef. I mean, commercial beef is grain-fed, so it's omega-6 rich, which is pro-inflammatory. So I don't really like that, although I'd even go with that over carbs, you know, especially processed grain carbs, your crackers and tortillas and breads and all that. So like the Taco Villa, that beef's not grass-fed, antibiotic-free, hormone-free. But I'd still go for it over mac and cheese or going to the pasta bar at Olive Garden or something. So there's good, better, and best. But if you're eating clean, good, healthy, grass-fed beef the way God intended it, every day is fine. But I would moderate the amount. I wouldn't just load your plate full of beef. It should be moderated to, I'd want more fat, which there's fat in beef, which is good, but you need to, you know, have some other, put some butter on it or have an avocado with it or have something fat with it. Eat a salad with a lot of, you know, fatty dressing on it, olive oil, for instance. So you want to get the good fat in, because if you just eat a bunch of protein, part of that will turn to sugar. And that's going to spike your insulin. And insulin's the enemy. Insulin causes insulin resistance. Insulin causes inflammation. You don't want your insulin spiking. And when you eat fats, you won't spike insulin. When you eat vegetables, you won't spike insulin. The more starchy vegetable, you know, a potato, which isn't really a vegetable, it's a tuber. But the white potatoes will spike you a little bit.
What about the purple potatoes?
Purple, not as much. So anything dark blue, purple, black, those things are better. So like carrots. Carrots have sugar in them, but if you get the original variety of carrots that God made, they're actually purple.
Yes, they have those at Natural Grocers. Those are, my kids actually like those, the purple carrots. Those are pretty cool.
Yeah. So starting out, just getting someone to not eat, just skip a meal or do a 24-hour or 36-hour fast once a week even, or spend a whole weekend doing a fast once a month. In some way, skip meals. And the whole thought behind that is, it's not just thought, but it's been proven in the scientific literature. And this is how we've eaten forever. I mean, thousands of years, every major religious group uses fast. Back when food wasn't available 24/7 down at the corner store, we would go through periods where we didn't have food. Either we went hunting and couldn't shoot something that day, or we had a famine come through, or locusts come through and wipe out our crop, or whatever. We go through periods of shortage of food. Even if it's just one meal where we had to skip a meal, or it was a few days we had to skip. I was reading the other day, and this was Dr. Fung actually talking about this. The world record on fasting, I think, was 382 days, I want to say.
How did they survive?
Yeah, it was amazing. I mean, he consumed liquid, but no food. And the body will go into fat burn. Everyone thinks, you know, oh no, starvation mode, slow your metabolism, burn your muscle, and all that's wrong. I used to preach this too. So the body's not going to start burning up muscle when you're in a few days of not eating. Because if you think about, you know, back in 1,000 years ago, the body wants to preserve muscle. If you're not eating food, it knows you need to keep your muscle and you actually need to keep your metabolism up so you can run and chase that next meal and actually kill it this time. So you burn fat, you go into fat burn mode when you're fasting. Your metabolic rate actually increases a little bit the first few days, and then it plateaus and stabilizes. It does not go down. What causes metabolism to go down is caloric restriction. So when you go on a diet, say Weight Watchers or some other caloric restriction, you're just reducing your calories down to 800 calories or 1,000 calories. That's when the metabolic rate goes down. So that's why you see, like, the Biggest Loser, burn more out than you put in. They go on a caloric restriction diet, then they go exercise hardcore, and you'll lose weight. You know, that first 6 months, those guys will drop 100 pounds, 150 pounds, but you notice they never do a reunion show on The Biggest Loser because all those all those people gain the weight back, and everybody knows this. I mean, anybody who's ever dieted, you know, throughout their life, they know you can restrict, calorie restrict, and you'll lose some initially, but then over time, you know, after a couple of months, that metabolic rate goes down so much, so you can't burn as many calories per hour. So even if you're, even if you dropped your calorie intake from 2,000 calories a day down to 1,300, well, if your metabolic rate dropped, doesn't matter, you're going to gain the weight back.
Yeah, but fasting is calorie restrictive. I mean, you're not eating anything.
It's a different way to, you're actually not calorie restricting. It's just you're consuming your calories in a certain time period. So like your lunch to supper, I mean, you may eat a few less calories, but you really need to get big meals, full meals, feast, you know, have a five-course supper. Get your calories in. But it's this insulin spike. When you don't spike your insulin for 18 hours or 24 hours, that's where you get all the benefit. Your growth hormone production goes up and your metabolic rate goes up. But when you just calorie restrict, so you eat a bunch of small meals all through, six small meals all throughout the day, but they're all 200 calories each or whatever, I mean, you're never getting a insulin drop to zero or to, you know, to really low. So you're not getting this hormonal shift that you really need for weight loss, because weight gain and weight loss is all hormone driven. You've got to get these hormones going in the right direction, and insulin being the primary hormone of weight gain. So you got to drop your insulin to nothing. And that's what you do with intermittent fasting. You don't do that with caloric restriction. So it's not about calories in, calories out. It's really not about the number of calories going in your mouth. It's the timing of it. We always preach that calories in, calories out, and that was just bogus, and the science has proven it now. It's been proven for a number of years, actually. I mean, I've been doing this 4 years, and it was before I started doing this that this research was out there. But research is very, very slow to penetrate the public mind and your doctor's mind. Most doctors would have no idea what I'm talking about right now. We're not taught, again, in nutrition, med school, and taught. So I didn't know anything about diets at all. I didn't know anything about vitamins, minerals, nutrients, food, diets, any of this. So in post Texas Garza County Health Clinic, I had patients all the time come and ask me, "Doc, help me lose weight." And I would just, I mean, I pulled this out of probably just my worldly knowledge. I would get a piece of paper and draw a big circle on it and divide that circle into like the compartments of a paper plate. So half the circle would be the big compartment, and then two quarters of the plate would be the small compartment. And I would put vegetables in the big compartment, meat in the small compartment, and a starch in the other small compartment. And I would just tell them, you know, reduce your portion size. That was all. And do it in this ratio. And there was starches right along with the protein. And then go exercise more. Burn more out than you put in was basically what I was telling people. And then I would throw phentermine, which was an appetite suppressant and stimulant. So your metabolism would artificially elevate. Your appetite would go down. You'd lose 30 pounds in a couple months. But it would never last because it wasn't the truth. But I didn't know. I mean, I was just trying something. And that's where most doctors are at, I think, when it comes to nutrition and weight loss. We just don't know because we're not taught. No one has the time to go read all this. Now, if every doctor out there would read Dr. Fung's book, Obesity Code, or just watch his YouTube lecture, number one, it's hard to believe because it's very obvious and very convincing that diabetes is a completely reversible disease. It's not a chronic disease that just worsens with time, which is what we're taught. So this totally takes the whole medical paradigm and turns it upside down, puts it on its head. And a lot of doctors actually just won't even listen to it because it's so backwards. I mean, it's so different from what we're taught.
So those of us that are sugar burners, when they go to do this, what do you do to combat that brain fog that comes with not eating?
One of the best things to do, number one, I wouldn't just jump right into your intermittent fast. I would slowly change your diet to where you're reducing your carbs over time, like say over 2 weeks, cut your carb portions down, 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 and then eventually even eliminate them from some meals, but replace them with fat. So the fat's what's going to give you the fullness, that sensation that you're full. It'll also give you the energy because your body will start to burn that fat for fuel. But once you've got your diet looking like that, then I would add, you can do some supplemental medium chain triglycerides, or coconut oil. And there's different products out there. There's powders and stuff that you can mix in your drink or coffee, or make bulletproof coffee, but get more fat in. And then when you're going to do that fast, you're going to skip that morning. meal, for instance, that's probably the easiest way to do it. Just drink some bulletproof coffee. It's the fat that will sustain you. And over time, you'll notice that it's no big deal, that you don't even get hunger pains because your body's flipped into fat burn metabolism.
I know. I had just the thought of fasting is like, ooh. I mean, I hear so much how it's good for you, but, oh, I feel so bad when I don't eat.
Well, then you probably really need to start, what you are eating needs to, I'd push it more to ketogenic. You know, get way more fat, get your carb intake way down over time. And then once you're at that, you know, 70% fat intake and almost zero carb intake, I mean, if you get down to like 10 carbs a day, 10 to 20 carbs a day, that's really low. Then, I mean, you'll pretty much be in the ketogenic state and you can make the switch and throw a fast in there.
What are some other, like, fats? I mean, I eat avocado and I do the grapeseed oil or
one of the greatest sources are small fish.
Oh, sardines. Smells like cat food.
Well, I'm
is there any way to fix those to make them more
kipper snacks?
I'll put Veritas Kitchen Ladies on that project. Let's get an anchovy and a sardine. Tastes good.
Yeah, I eat them all the time.
Please do. I mean, we open a can and the cats come running, and I'm just like,
because the cats know what's good.
They do, but I'm just like,
the fatty nuts are a good source. Their protein content's not too
walnuts,
high. The walnut, like pecan, and macadamia. Mm-hmm. Those are your best ones. And then just butter.
I just feel like I eat the same things over and over again.
Well, and you may, and it's, I think for a time period, if you're trying to reach a certain goal, you may have to sacrifice and do that. Over the long haul, this eating shouldn't be, you know, that hard, and it shouldn't be a stress at all. You just eat real food and avoid the processed food. And
sugars.
Yeah.
Inflammatory stuff.
I mean, everything out of a package pretty much is going to have tons of sugar in it. They add it to it. And sodium, and so.
It's the weekends that get us.
Yeah.
We do really well
during the week.
During the weekday. And
the
weekends.
We just blow it.
How, like eating out, you mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I mean, at most restaurants, there's meat and veggies. So you're just tempted to order something else, you mean?
Well, like, you know, a couple weeks ago we went to Blue Sky Hamburgers, you know, and sometimes I'll take the top bun off, or I'm real bad about
those. Good hamburgers,
I pick my sandwiches to death. I'm like, I have a whole basket full of like bread, but
well, when we go to Blue Sky, I get the protein plate. It has a chicken patty, a beef patty, and bacon on it, and then the Greek salad is really good. It has olives and I mean, that's what my kids eat. They love that Greek salad, and we cut up the protein, and that's it. I mean, occasionally we'll have the have the bun, but it's rare. So we go to Blue Sky all the time.
Well, and now I know so much about bread and gluten that if I eat it, I'm like, oh, so bad.
Well, Percy Street Bakery, get with him. I mean, he's not going to be able to, I don't think, have his buns at Blue Sky. But, you know, at least at home. Percy Street Bakery. He'll use einkorn wheat. Which is still wheat, but as we talked about before, it's God's wheat, the original wheat, non-hybridized. It's the only wheat that's not hybridized. So it has 14 chromosomes, which is how God made it, instead of the 46 chromosomes of today's wheat. So it's a much less pro-inflammatory. It's much less, has less gluten, and it doesn't change into sugar when you digest it. It doesn't spike your sugar and insulin near as much
as today's wheat. You know what's interesting? I just thought of something. My kids just, like, beg me for bread. And here lately I've been buying, Walmart has this stuff called Dave's bread, and it's organic bread, and one of the varieties you can get has like only 1 gram of sugar. But it seems like since I've been doing that, our allergies are like crazy. Do you think that can have any
crazy worse?
Yeah, like everybody's sneezing and they're congested. And
when did you switch?
Oh, I mean, I've been doing this for couple weeks now. I gave in and let them have their bread back because they just act like they're being tortured if they can't have bread and there's nothing to eat if there's no bread.
Poor deprived kids. I need to go to Africa for a couple weeks.
Groceries.
It could be coincidence, and I'm just telling you from the clinic, what we're seeing in our clinic is a lot of allergies. I mean,
everybody's got them right
August
now.
Was wet. September's been wet. And I mean, there's all kinds of stuff growing, and I mean, even me, I'm a little allergy today. So probably coincidence.
I think so too. I think
that. Well, Emma took a 15-minute golf cart ride and came back home, and she was all snotty, and she's been that way all weekend.
I think it's in the air because we've had so much rain,
and
we're not used to the Seattle.
Right.
I mean, this is like Seattle weather.
Yeah. Yeah,
now, this week, it's like today, it's going to be 93, sunny, hot all week long.
Yeah. It's
so that'll kill a lot of that off.
Right.
I bet any amount of money, allergies go way down by the end of the week.
Yeah, you got all kinds of molds, funguses, spores of stuff that have been sitting there in
because
the ground.
Because of all
now
the wet and rain and stuff. I think it's that, not because they ate some bread.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, but anyway. Okay, we'll take a break and, well, hang on a second. We'll take a call, I should say, do that and then take the break. But we'll take the call first. Good morning. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I had a question for him real quick. I run quite a lot during the week, and somebody mentioned the benefits of coconut oil, and I heard him mention that just a few minutes ago. Can he explain that a little bit, and also the benefits of cod liver oil? I've been taking cod liver, which I really like, actually. So,
okay, so cod liver oil, and what was the other one?
Coconut oil.
There's
a nutritional supplement that I buy. That I just started buying. It's got coconut oil in it as well. So.
Okay. Yeah, coconut oil is a great fat. It's the good saturated fat that we need. And supplementally, if there's like pills or oils, you know, in a jar that you just drink, that's fine. Or you can just buy some coconut oil, preferably organic coconut oil. And it's very, very beneficial. One of the reasons I like it is the caprylic acid in it is antifungal. A lot of my patients, because of the grain sugar intake, have candida overgrowth, which is a type of yeast or fungus in the gut. It's normally found in our gut, but it's in great abundance for people that eat grain and sugar because that's fertilizer for candida. And the caprylic acid helps, it's antifungal, so it helps bring that fungal population down. But also it's really good for brain health. The fats that are in the coconut oil stimulate brain nutrition. The brain loves to live off ketones, which that's the whole point of the ketogenic diet. And even athletes, even runners or marathoners, stuff like that, everyone's used to carb loading. But
right.
you can do it. I mean, I've read a book by this guy was like a top mega triathlon guy down in Hawaii. He did it all on vegetables, which I don't recommend, but the ketogenic diet, there's all kinds of articles you can find out there on ketogenic diet and intense training and intense workouts. And in fact, one of my employees, Angie Romans at the clinic, does long bike rides, you know, those long 60-mile races or 70-mile races or 100 mm-hmm. miles. And she'll do that in a ketogenic state, meaning she'll be eating 70-80% fat and then moderate protein, very low to no carb, and she'll be in ketosis. And she has so much energy, even as she's going through the finish line, has more energy than she ever had in the carb state because the body's using fat for fuel. And the body can easily do this. Once you get off the carbs, the body will flip its metabolism over to fat burn. And even if you're lean, I mean, I'm 6 foot, 160 pounds, I'm lean, but I've got 45,000 kilocalories to burn just in the fat that's intermingled in between my muscles and just the sub-Q. So even if you think you don't have any fat, you really do. And you can do it. But coconut oil... you know, just there's tremendous benefits. It supports thyroid health. It supports your immune function, a healthy skin. But really, I like it from the metabolic standpoint. It's good fuel for your cells, great fuel for your brain. The brain loves to operate off of ketones. Dr. Mercola always has good articles. And I think if you just Google Mercola.com and coconut oil, he always puts all the scientific research on there. So if you're more of a science guy. And there's tons of uses for it, too. I mean, you can use it topically as a moisturizer. I've had patients use it as a makeup remover, sunscreen.
Mouthwash.
Mouthwash, oil pulling. A shaving lotion, even. You can mix it with essential oils to do different home remedies. I've had some people use it for deodorant, even. So tons of uses for it. My chapstick that I get is primarily coconut oil, and it has a little bit of essential oil in it too. So just tremendous health benefits from that. And then cod liver oil, similar as far as the healthy fat. It's got more omega-3 in it, And omega-3 is kind of just a variety of fat that the cell membranes need to be made up of, and people that eat too much processed food will get too much omega-6. No, pretty much nobody's getting enough omega-3, and cod liver oil is just a good way to get that omega-3. You know, there's fish oil, there's krill oil, and cod liver is just another one. It's one of the older ones that's been around for a while, but it's a great one.
Very good. Okay, thank you. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. And that's another way, Melody, to get good fats in. I mean, just supplementally. You know, taking in coconut oil supplements or cod liver,
yeah,
fish oil,
I
krill.
I put a huge blob of coconut oil in my protein shake every morning. I do that. Good. But that's the only time I do it. I don't do it with any other time during the day.
But you're supplementing that way. That's good.
But, I mean,
I don't
use
get
it
that.
As a mouthwash.
She doesn't make me this stuff at home. I don't know why she doesn't.
Are you serious?
Uh-oh.
Because I will make a healthy meal and
she
you
almost
make a,
jumped over that table.
You make a box of macaroni and cheese.
Hey, but I put a lot of healthy things in it.
Yeah, there's
I load it up with veggies and sardines and I mean, I'm doing okay. It's kind of like a
okay,
vitamin.
Whatever.
I get a little possible.
We need a webcam in y'all's kitchen, I think.
It is pretty interesting around our house.
Yeah.
No doubt.
I come in and I'm like, what is that smell? Oh, it's Wade cooking.
It's all good.
I have a question.
Oh, but hold the question. We'll go to break.
Oh, no.
And then you can ask the question. But if you have a question along the way, 745-5800, stick around.
Vitamins Plus is a full-line health food store located inside Drug Emporium on the corner of 82nd and Slide Road. They have one of the largest gluten-free selections in Lubbock. If they don't have what you're looking for, then it can be special ordered for you. They are Texas-owned and operated for over 20 years. Vitamins Plus carries many locally grown and produced products in the store. Good for you groceries at great for you prices. That's Vitamins Plus, 82nd Slide Road. Come by and see us today.
At Smoothie King, wheatgrass juice is very popular with our health-conscious customers. Why is wheatgrass juice so good for you? Well, wheatgrass juice helps cleanse the body of toxins, hence the potency of just 1 ounce. Wheatgrass, ounce for ounce, has more vitamin C than oranges, more vitamin A than carrots, and a healthy dose of other vitamins, too. Wheatgrass assists in building endurance and athletic performance by supplying the cells, tissues, and muscles with extra oxygen. It's a complete protein containing all the essential amino acids. Wheatgrass has a high mineral content. Magnesium, calcium, potassium, and iron are all available when you drink wheatgrass juice. It also contains hundreds of enzymes, which assist digestion and metabolism. Studies suggest that 1 ounce of wheatgrass juice has the vitamins and minerals of 2.5 pounds of green leafy vegetables. Get by Smoothie King today on the corner of Memphis Avenue and 19th Street. For optimal health, try wheatgrass juice at Smoothie King today.
Listen to your body. It may be telling you it's missing something. When we're missing omega-3s, we can feel run down, stiff, achy, or have a hard time focusing and handling stress. Omega-3s are vastly deficient in the American food supply, and we can't achieve optimal health without them. Nordic Naturals fish oils provide a convenient way to get the omega-3s you need and deliver industry-leading purity, freshness, and taste. Visit Natural Health Market at 4414 82nd Street in the Village Shopping Center.
We're visiting with Dr. Flippin with Exodus New Beginnings, located at 3805 22nd Street, Suite 2A. Their telephone number out that way, 771-4327. You can always check out the website, exodusnb.com. Go there, check it out. Dr. Flippin, tell us about chelation therapy and why IV chelation therapy is better than oral chelation therapy.
Well, first of all, I'd like to tell you, Wade, about chelation, what it is. And basically, it is an agent that pulls heavy metals out of your body. Heavy metals get stored in your bones and your organs. And so that's what chelation is. Basically, the IV chelation is a lot more effective because you get a higher dose. So the oral chelating agents only have a tenth of the dose of an IV chelation. So you would have to do 10 times more oral chelations, plus the fact that they're only 23% absorbed. So do the math. At 23%, it's 40 times longer.
Oh, yeah. And we all know that we're exposed to environmental toxins and a lot of heavy metals and fillings in our teeth. I mean, we've got it all over the place.
And this really helps to combat diseases related to those heavy metals, right?
Exactly. And one of the diseases is coronary artery disease.
Wow, yeah.
The heavy metals actually cause inflammation, which starts the cascade of coronary artery disease.
Well, definitely check it out. Again, located at 3805 22nd Street, Suite 2A, right here in Lubbock with Dr. Flippin. Again, that number to call, 771-4327. Be sure to check out the website, too, exodusnb.com. Call 771-4327 today. You'll be glad you did.
Welcome back to You're the Cure, right here with Dr. Ben Edwards, MD, of course, integrative holistic medicine and family practitioner at Veritas Medical. Veritas Medical, of course, you can check out our website, veritasmedical.com. Our direct number at the clinic, 771-1160. That's 771-1160. Of course, along the way, if you have a question for the good doctor, feel free to give us a call at any time, 745-5800, 745-5800, along the way. So you had a question or you wanted to respond to something before the break?
Yeah.
No, I was just making the point that a lot of people say, you know, oh, I don't want coconut oil or fatty stuff because it's going to clog my arteries and it's going to give me high cholesterol.
Yeah. That is old school thinking that's wrong. It's just scientifically wrong. You can't lump all fats together. But I know the thinking out there is I'm going to eat fat and that's going to clog my arteries, go straight to my arteries. It's just wrong. Now, certain fats will increase your, pretty much all fats will increase your cholesterol. But you got to go deeper than that. High cholesterol by itself doesn't cause heart attacks. So that's another myth that we got to get through. There is pro-inflammatory cholesterol and there's an anti-inflammatory cholesterol. So cholesterol is, first of all, God made cholesterol for us to for a certain purpose. We need cholesterol. There's no problem with cholesterol. It's a problem when it gets inflamed. Inflamed cholesterol is a problem, and specifically LDL. LDL can be either small, dense particle size, or it can be big, fluffy particles. So you can't just get a regular cholesterol panel at your doctor's office of, you know, total cholesterol, HDL, LDL, and triglycerides. That doesn't tell you anything. You've got to get the more advanced profile that breaks that LDL down and tells you what kind of LDL you have. So if you eat a high-fat diet like I'm proposing here, but it's good fat, it's the God fat, not man fat. So I'm not talking canola oil and soybean oil and margarine and all this processed man-made kind of oil. I'm talking the good healthy oils like coconut oil, avocado oil, real butter. So when you eat these high-fat diets, your cholesterol will go up. However, when you eat the good fats, the coconut oil type fats, your healthy LDL, which is your big fluffy LDL, goes up, your HDL goes up, and your triglycerides go down. All three of those, big healthy LDL, high HDL, low triglycerides, those numbers are associated with the lowest heart attack and stroke rates. Lowest. There was a study I just found. This was a study of a Pacific Islander group, and they happen to be very lean and heart disease and stroke free, but 63% of their total calorie intake comes from coconut fat. And their total cholesterol rose, and so did their HDL compared to the baseline of the Western diet. And that just goes to the point, when you look at that LDL, if it's the big fluffy LDL, you're totally protected. It's actually more protective. Now, if you eat a low-fat, high-carb diet, which is what a lot of people like the American Heart Association is currently recommending, although that will be changing, I'm quite confident. It just takes forever for the science to come around to get them convinced. But low-fat, high-carb, so your whole wheat stuff, that actually increases your small dense LDL. Small dense LDL is pro-inflammatory and increases your risk for heart attack and stroke. So it's not this simple thing of you eat fat and you clog your arteries. That's just wrong. It's not good science. I mean, it's just a myth. Unfortunately, it takes a while for myths to go away. And that, I mean, it's kind of like lumping cauliflower and cupcakes into the same category as Dr. Mark Hyman is famous for saying. They're both carbs. Technically, those are all carbohydrates, a cauliflower and a cupcake. And so you can't just lump all these fats into one category. You can't lump all carbs into one category. There's healthy fat, just like there's healthier carbs. So that's kind of my answer to that. Coconut oil does not cause heart attack. It does not clog your arteries, and in fact, it's protective. So who's ever out there preaching the opposite is just preaching out of old science, and, you know, they're not up to date on stuff, which was me. I mean, I'm totally guilty. That was totally me not too long ago. So we have a few minutes left. I'm going to give an intro to what I'm going to talk about next week. Everything we're talking about today pretty much is going totally against traditional thinking, the conventional wisdom and conventional doctor education. You know, diabetes, type 2, reversible in the vast majority of cases, as opposed to being a chronic progressive disease. That's the complete opposite of what everyone thinks and what we're taught. Same with what I just said on fat. Eating healthy fat does not clog your arteries. It actually protects your arteries and decreases your risk of heart attack and stroke. Again, these are total polar opposites. So how did we get here? How did we get to this point where right is wrong and wrong is right? you know, Hippocrates said 2,000 years ago, let thy food be thy medicine and thy medicine be thy food. And about the same time, an ancient Ayurvedic quote was, when the diet is right, there's no need for medicine. When the diet is wrong, medicine is of little value. And the point of that is, you know, medicine is used to manage a problem, but it's never the root cause. It's never addressing the root cause of the problem. And that's why even with the diabetic pills, you see over time the disease worsens and there's not reversal, and no one's ever getting off pills because it's never addressing the root cause. I mean, Sir William Osler himself, and this guy's one of the founders of modern medicine. He founded John Hopkins School of Medicine. All the medical students, you know, learn Osler's stuff. But the one thing I didn't learn, and the quote they left out of my education was, this is Sir William Osler, one of the first duties of the physician is to educate the masses not to take medicine. That's a pretty big statement from the father of medicine. So whether you're going back 2,000 years or 100 years or Thomas Edison in 1902 saying the doctor of the future will instruct his patient how to care for the human frame and how to diet himself instead of giving medicine. So the deal with medicine is it is a symptomatic treatment. You are treating the fever, not the source of the fever. You know, that leg infection we talked about earlier in the show. There's going to be a fever associated with the leg wound. But if all you did was give Tylenol and got the fever down, you're going to look a little better and feel a little better, but that wound's not getting any better, and it's going to kill you. And that's what's happening across the board. All these medications do the same thing. They bring your blood pressure down. They bring your cholesterol down. They bring your blood sugar down. But they're not addressing the root cause of the problem. And that is why Western societies like ours are the sickest ones. America's leading the pack. Our infant mortality rate to our lifespan across the board, from youngsters to old people, we're sicker than anyone else in the Western world. We go to the doctor more, spend more money, have more surgeries, more procedures, but we're the sickest. We have more heart attack and stroke, more cancer, more autoimmune. We die younger. So it's just very obvious the last 50 years of an experiment of treating all these diseases, quote-unquote, with medications has failed. Now, for patients who don't want to address root causes, don't want to change their diet and lifestyle, then fine. We need medicines to help manage them, I guess. I did read one study that said it's sometimes better to do nothing. Even with uncontrolled blood sugar, sometimes the outcomes were better when we did nothing. The third leading cause of death in America right now after heart attack and cancer is doctors with their medications and their procedures. That's a study out of the New England Journal of Medicine. So you've got to be real careful when you look at long-term implications of just managing a symptom versus fixing it. The implications are pretty vast. But next week we'll get more into how we got here. I've been doing some study on the history of medicine going back to the 1800s till now. and how we got on our current path. So I'll share some of that next week.
I just want to take a pill and be healthy.
That's the thing.
And then eat the way you want to.
That quick,
yeah, and then just eat junk all day long and feel good.
The quick fix mentality is pervasive. I mean, everybody's like that. It's human nature. You know, live the way I want to live, feed my flesh, and ignore the truth, and let me just keep going. And you can feel okay-ish. You don't even know you're feeling bad. You just learn to suppress it and ignore it. And then you take some medicine and you feel a little better in the temporary short term, but long term, and that's the problem. When you're 60 and you're having your first heart attack or cancer hits or whatever, all these different diseases are coming, by then it's kind of too late. I mean, it's not actually too late. It's never too late. I mean, 98% of our patients that see us every day have one of those major diagnoses, and that's why they end up at our clinic. But the point is, you can take a pill today, feel a little better. You're not going to see the consequences of that, you know, for 10 or 15 years. So when you're covering up the symptom, the problem that's going on inside the body is still there. You just don't know it. You don't feel it. The symptomatic treatment's really good at helping you kind of get by and mask everything. But that's why we're the sickest country in the world, and it's why we're dying younger than anybody else.
Well, let me ask you this question for those out there listening saying, okay, well, my health is a mess, or my diet is a mess. What are some things that I can stop right away to actually see some direct benefit and results to that? In other words, for example, if say I'm a big soda pop drinker, okay, so if you cut those out, then immediately you start feeling better. You know, that kind of, I mean, where do you start?
Well, initially in your first day or two or three, you may actually feel worse because you're going to detox off that sugar and the caffeine. So be aware of that. You may get some headaches. You may get flu-like symptoms. You may just feel bad. And plow through it. You'll get there. You'll get through it. But then, yeah, your energy can go up. When it comes to Cokes in particular, especially if you're consuming a lot of them, when you drink liquid sugar like that, you're spiking your insulin so high and so fast that most guys will notice a pretty good weight loss in the first month. Just getting off Coke, they'll lose 10 pounds. And that's because they're dropping their insulin. When you drop your sugar intake, you drop your insulin, and insulin's a hormone that tells you to store fat. So that's the biggest thing most people see right away when they get aggressive on dropping their sugar. So it kind of depends on where you're at, though, and how bad your diet is, how sugary your diet's been, how much grain and carb has been in your diet. But most people will feel bad the first couple days, and then they'll start to have more energy, their brain fog will start to clear up, and their weight will start to come down just by getting the insulin spike down.
Wow.
Man, there's some good kombuchas out there that taste like there's a root beer, a Dr. Pepper, and a cola one.
That's, yeah, really. Some patients can do that. They can just switch, make the switcheroo from Coke to some of these healthier versions of Coke or kombuchas that you can find at Natural Health Market. But then others, their taste buds are so tuned in to that sweet sugar of Coca-Cola or Pepsi or whatever, and they make that switch and just doesn't taste right to them, and they can't do it. So some people have to do an elimination where they pretty much fast from those high sugar drinks and then let their taste buds calm down for a couple of weeks, and then they can switch over to those. And then some people just realize, hey, I don't even need any of that. I just don't need it.
Yeah.
So there's kind of two ways to go. Some people need a hardcore, sort of like you go to the Betty Ford Detox Center. you just go hardcore and cut all the carb and sugar out immediately. And then other people need to kind of ease into it. So some patients, I'll tell them, we just start with simply don't change anything of the kind of food you're eating. Just don't eat so much. Don't eat all day long. Just get them down to 3 meals a day, basically, is what I try to do initially in some patients. And then slowly we try to bring their carb load down and bring their real food up. So getting them from packaged food to real food is the next step. And then we start bringing their carbs down, get them on more veggies and meat and fat. So some people like a slow transition. Now, slow transition, you won't notice the benefit as quick or as abruptly, but it's some people need to go
and
that
don't
way.
Don't forget about that fast deal. That's kind of interesting.
Yeah, the intermittent fast is one of the ideal ways. I mean, ultimately, the goal, I think, for most of my patients would be eating a high-fat, moderate-protein, low-carb diet with intermittent fasting routinely, whether that be the daily 18-hour or every weekend do a 24-hour, but somehow get it into your routine and then do some resistance training, even just 10 or 15-minute resistance training at the end of that fast. So like at the end of that 18 hours, do some push-ups, pull-ups, sit-ups, whatever. It doesn't even have to be with weights, but do some sort of resistance, because your growth hormone is highest at the end of that fast. And if you hit it with resistance training, you're going to build more muscle, lean muscle. And lean muscle is good. I mean, it burns at a higher rate of metabolism.
So you want to do the weights or strength training or even something like that before you eat.
Correct. Yep. Because that's when you're maximizing that growth hormone. I mean, there's even bodybuilders. You can look up on bodybuilder.com and ketogenic diet. Your body's burning the fat, but you're adding the lean muscle, especially. And if you're going to be working out like that, like, you know, the one caller I think was a runner, he said. But if you'll take some branched chain amino acids at that time also, that's fuel for your muscles to build. So branched chain amino acids, then the medium chain triglycerides, that's the good fat you find with coconut oil, or just buy a supplement, MCT oil, medium chain triglycerides, and some fish oil. I mean, just those three supplements right there. Branched chain amino acids, medium chain triglycerides, MCT / coconut oil, and some fish oil. Just do those three and intermittent fast. You know, skip breakfast, eat lunch and supper, and your lunch and supper should consist of mostly fats and proteins and vegetables, and keep the grains and sugars minimum to none. And right, I mean, that's health right there in a nutshell. If everybody could just do that, they pretty much wouldn't need me.
Wow.
Hey, kind of a side note, but I was reading, and coconut aminos, natural grocers has those, and that's what we marinated our meat in this weekend. And it's really good.
Coconut aminos are basically a substitute for soy sauce, maybe a little sweeter than soy sauce, but yeah, it's awesome and it's healthy. There's a good mayonnaise. The VeritasKitchen.com ladies just did a video.
I saw that. I watched it.
Grocery shopping video at Natural Grocers. They did one at Costco and they did one at Farmer's Market. And they go through some of these products like mayo, but it's avocado oil that's in this mayonnaise. Because most mayo at the store is canola oil or soy. And both of those are pro-inflammatory. You don't want them. But they're cheaper. They're cheaper to make. They're cheaper to get to your grocery store. They last on the shelf, blah, blah, blah. So that's, I mean, it's all about money. So if it's cheaper to make a mayo a certain way, they're going to make it. It's not about your health. So you got to get educated and get your mayos, fine. Just get the right kind.
And y'all had a recipe for mayonnaise.
Yeah, it's real easy to make your own. Sometimes that's daunting for people. Like you said, fasting, scary. Well, some people think it's scary to make their own stuff. Mm-hmm. But super easy to make mayonnaise at home. And just look it up on the internet. There's instructions on how to do that. Or on VeritasKitchen.com if you are a member of our healthy community. Which we'll be in San Angelo next Saturday doing a whole day-long presentation to San Angelo. So if y'all have friends or family down there, let them know. The Veritas Healthy Community presentation is going on the road. So Veritas Medical, Veritas Movement, Veritas Kitchen, Veritas Garden, and Veritas Education. Those are the entities right now that make up the Veritas Healthy Community. Members to our community have access, obviously, to the clinic. But eventually, that should be the least of what you use in the healthy community. The garden, the movement, the education primarily, and the kitchen should be the parts of the community that get utilized the most.
All right.
So, $85 a month, be healthy and not need the traditional healthcare system, which is failing.
There you go.
Had to get that in.
It's good. I'm a member.
Dr. Ben Edwards, MD, of course, check us out, veritasmedical.com. 771-1160, the number at the clinic, 771-1160. Dr. Edwards, we appreciate it. We'll see you back here next Monday on the show.